This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. The narrative at this year's Democratic National Convention was unambiguous. The upcoming election isn't a referendum on a partisan America because, look, John Kasich and Colin Powell and even anonymous Republicans are on the bandwagon. The messaging, in fact, was barely even about Joe Biden. No, we were warned something far more urgent is at stake. Democracy itself.
The science-based action the HEROES Act we enacted 3 months ago is essential to safeguard lives, livelihood, and the life of our democracy. And who is standing in the way? Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump.
Do not let them take away your power. Do not let them take away your democracy. This administration has shown it will tear our democracy down if that's what it takes for them to win.
Funny they should mention, because the backdrop for the Save Democracy Please was the administration's brazen attempts to gut the U.S. Postal Service months before the biggest mail-in voting exercise in history.
At the beginning of the weekend, Donald Trump basically said, I'm going to sabotage the post office.
At its most basic, this election is about preserving our democracy. During this president's term, the unthinkable has become normal. He has tried to prevent people from voting, undermine the U.S. Postal Service.
You know, the president may hate the post office, but he's still going to have to send them a change of address card come January.
The simmering crisis boiled over last Thursday when Trump admitted that his gutting of the institution was intended to hobble voting by mail, believed at least by him to favor Democrats.
They want $25 billion, billion, for the post office. Now, they need that money in order to have the post office work so it can take all of these millions and millions of ballots. Now, in the meantime, they aren't getting there. By the way, those are just two items. But if they don't get those two items, that means you can't have universal mail-in voting because they're not equipped to have it.
During a Senate hearing on Friday, recently appointed Postmaster General Louis DeJoy was grilled by the Homeland Security Committee about his sweeping cutbacks that, intentionally or not, fulfilled Trump's vision. But as Republicans on the committee were quick to observe, he didn't start the fire.
From what I've heard so far today, apparently, the post office never had any issues. There was never any delays. There was never any mail that was late. There were never any financial problems. There was never any challenge to mail-in votings until 65 days ago when you arrived. And then apparently all chaos has broken out in the post office.
Fair point, Senator James Lankford. But what he and his GOP colleagues failed to point out was that it was their party's own policies that, intentionally or not, crippled the Postal Service to begin with. And according to New Republic staff writer Alex Shepard, when journalists start talking about the public sector, they tend to be sucked into a similar partisan ideological narrative.
Yeah, the Postal Service exists as a kind of symbol of good government, and it's one that has been surprisingly resilient to Republican attacks, particularly ones aimed at privatizing various public sector services. But that, you know, hasn't dimmed their enthusiasm for making widespread demands for greater efficiency that, in fact, lower efficiency. These have certainly increased over the last 15 years, but it feels like we've only started paying attention to them over the last week or so.
Now, you just said lead to greater efficiency first by creating lower efficiency, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, we should observe that this process goes back decades. along with the privatization dreams for schools, colleges, Social Security, prisons, even parts of the military. But you write that the particular image we have of the post office today really has its origins in 2006. How so?
Yeah, in 2006, Congress passed the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act, known as PAEA, and that required USPS to make a number of changes. The most substantial was that it required them to fully fund all of their pensions 75 years in advance, which created a $72 billion hole in the operating budget immediately. Now, no other institution is required to do this, and it immediately turned a profitable arm of the federal government into an unprofitable one. Now, the timing of that was interesting because that was a year in which the USPS was, as it had been for several years, in the black. It was also the year that Facebook opened up to everyone. And you start to see large standing changes in the way that people communicate. That also has provided a hit to the Postal Service's budget, but not as substantial as this one about pensions.
Now, over the past couple of months, we've observed Trump's overt meddling into the post office. In the person of his new postmaster, General Louis DeJoy, he is an underqualified Trump mega donor with financial ties to Postal Service competitors. And next thing you know, he was cutting overtime for workers in the middle of a pandemic in advance of an election and had removed mail sorting machines from post offices nationwide, which raised media eyebrows, but not exactly at first, at least, alarm, until about a week ago when Trump blurted out his sabotage scheme on Fox Business. These aha journalistic moments about public sector institutions follow a pattern.
Yeah. In the case of USPS, there are a few things happening where, you know, at the same time, Louis DeJoy is fulfilling this longstanding conservative project of hobbling USPS, of creating space in which its competitors can thrive. He is also doing so at a time where it will almost certainly, if not aid the president's reelection campaign, then certainly bolster claims that he may make challenging the legitimacy of the election. The press is largely focused on the second one of those still, and the first part is, I think, still gone unnoticed.
You said that the Republican strategy over the decades has been to defund the post office, for example, by forcing them to fund their pension plan going out 75 years, in order to actually force their service to deteriorate in order ultimately to privatize the organization.
What Louis DeJoy has been doing since the spring, you know, is familiar to anyone who's covered the private equity industry in America in recent years. It's you look at an organization that's losing money and then you strip resources from it in the name of efficiency. And then, of course, it becomes less efficient and you're in this endless cycle of taking things away. But the larger project, I think, is ideological as much as it is practical, that conservatives don't like the fact that this is a government institution that works, that the USPS should be treated like a business. That's put a giant target on its back. The Postal Service itself is a kind of American value, saying that, you know, we're all Americans and we all should be connected together no matter what that costs. The drive to privatize that not only would have dramatic consequences for people who rely on USPS to get medication or to keep in touch with loved ones, particularly incarcerated people. But it also would be a betrayal of what I think is an ideal, which is that we should have a system that brings us all together.
You believe that we've allowed a distorted picture of the public sector to form in the public's minds over decades, and that we've even internalized the Reagan doctrine that big government is not the solution, but the problem. Drunk the Kool-Aid, have we?
Yeah, I think that the image of a postal worker sort of remains Newman from Seinfeld.
You don't even have to lick the stamps. But it's not to be. So I'm hanging it up. You quit the post office?
Kind of. I'm still collecting checks. I'm just not delivering mail.
Somebody who's, you know, lazy, they take a three-hour break. The post office itself is a drab and dreary place where you wait in line for hours and then are told to go somewhere else. It's sort of the DMV next door. Part of the issue, I think, is political, and that Democrats have also internalized a lot of these ideas. But I think that there's also a sense that journalists walk into a post office and they see not the connective tissue of this country. They see another, you know, failing organ of big government. One of the strange things about all this hand-wringing about if the USPS can handle the election is that they just finished, you know, a substantial project, which is handling the United States Census. The USPS does this kind of work all the time, and they've done it despite the fact that they've been, you know, hobbled by staffing cuts and demands to run like a business when it's not a business.
And how do we get the narrative that you just provided back into the minds of the media if, in fact, we have drunk the Kool-Aid?
I think that there's a real shyness about communicating values in media. That's not true when it comes to sort of First Amendment issues. Members of the press will always, you know, beat their chests when they're kicked out of a White House briefing room or something. But you don't get that with other values. Instead, there's a real reliance on others. You need advocacy groups. You need a postal workers union or members of the Democratic Party. But there are a lot of cases where those voices aren't going to be forthcoming, and that you need to look at institutions for what they provide beyond profit and efficiency. It's a public service, and the American people, for the most part, recognize it as that. It's Congress that hasn't, and if it does do that, then I think things will get a lot better.
Alex, thank you.
Thank you.
Alex Shepard is a staff writer at The New Republic.